Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I used to believe that you absolutely should never say I love you to someone until you've been dating them at least 3 months. I don't think that's true anymore. I think you don't have to. You know, live your best life. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I'm also in the same place as you right now, which is not relevant to the topic, but also very exciting.
New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that, waiting 3 months to say that you love someone? Because I know that you are, like, slower to warm to people than I am.
But Prickly alley cat.
Yeah. But I feel like I fall in love oftentimes faster than 3 months, and I think that, like, it's kind of arbitrary to have, like, a time constraint on it, because, like, you could see the person any number of times and talk to them any number of times in that 3 month period. Like, you could see them twice, or you could see them 60 times, like, you know. Yeah. Like,
I think it's really arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is, you know what I think? I think it's the, like, not sex educator nerd version of talking about NRE.
Yeah, like, you gotta...
Don't make big decisions while you're in NRE.
Yeah.
Is, I think, the, like, if we're doing the, like, exploding brain meme, that's the first brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, somewhere down near the bottom is, like, don't move in with someone during NRE. NRE is a concept.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree yeah. that you can't necessarily know if it's, like, super early, whether it's love or just NRE, but... I think that it's kind of, like, infantilizing to tell people that they can never know that. Like, you can know yourself pretty well after, like, a lot of dating experiences, and you can know when you're feeling love, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it also leans really heavily on the idea of love as this extremely unique, precious commodity, mm-hmm. and one-of-a-kind feeling,
mm-hmm.
That is meant for the one, right? Because if you say I love you to this person, and it's not true...
Yeah.
I mean, you probably hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
Depending on the... Like, you know, whereas, like, I'm like, maybe don't move in with someone, because, like, mortgages are shit pain in the ass to untangle.
Yeah.
You know, like, that seems more tangible than, like... You're dealing with some intense feeling stuff around mm-hmm. I love you, but, like,
yeah,
it's not necessarily make or break life or death,
mm-hmm.
end of the world.
I have had people say I love you, like, way too soon to me, and it never really freaked me out that much. Like, I think the earliest someone said it to me was after, like, 3 weeks. And it kind of just, like, slipped out accidentally, and I just sort of, like, laughed at him. It was like, did you just, and he was like, yeah. But, like, I did not feel that way about him.
Yeah. Yikes.
But, you know, he spoke his truth. Can't fault the guy, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, today we're talking about myths related to love and dating and relationships, because I realize we love doing these myth-busting episodes, but we've done them, I think, only about sex and polyamory, mm-hmm. and that's, like, not the whole spectrum of...
I really like yelling about things I have opinions about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that reminds me, today we were trying to submit our podcast to Spotify, and they made us pick only 3 categories, and 2 of them were sex and sexuality, and then there was, like, relationships, dating, mental health, and cannabis, and we had to, like, narrow it down.
And we were like, well, really? What are we at its core?
Yeah. That's the hardest decision I've had to make all day. All week, maybe. Anyway, okay. The first myth I want us to examine is that you shouldn't have sex until the 3rd date. Where did I hear this? I feel like this is, like, a rom-com thing, or maybe, like, a Sex in the City type of vibe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it also just sounds like advice from moms, you know?
Or from, like, Cosmo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think it's that same, like, arbitrary timeline thing. There's a degree of... Because this does seem like something that's thrown primarily at women.
Yes.
And people socialized as women.
Yeah.
Because, like, men are supposed to want to fuck as soon as they can.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess that's fine for them. I don't know.
I guess. How's that working out for you? Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's really arbitrary, and I think there are so many things to pay attention to in terms of compatibility
mm-hmm.
when you're dating someone new and learning about them. And I think people need to find where sex falls in that for them.
Yeah.
And this, I don't know, weirdly makes it like it's this special other category. Like, you can find out if you have movie compatibility and if you enjoy the same types of food as this person.
Mm-hmm.
But not until the third date can you find out if your naked bits work.
Well, I think that this is based on the, like, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free type of thing. Because I think that the idea originally is that, like, as a woman, you should, like, basically force the dude to get to know you before you put out so that you have a shot at a relationship, which is just so goddamn awful.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, because, like, I guess the notion is, like, if you have sex on the first date, they just, like, won't call you back. And, like, I think if that's the type of person that they are, then clearly, like, they weren't that into you to begin with. And, like, they're probably, if that bothers you, then you're not the right person for them. Like, yeah. Why waste three dates figuring that out? Like,
yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, it's really important for me to know if we're into, like, the same stuff, and yeah. I'm not spending three dates with someone just to find out that they're vanilla, like, because then we're not gonna date. I'm not gonna date a vanilla person. I know who I am, like.
But, okay, counterpoint, I do want to, like, just so we're not entirely trash-talking this notion, I do like to wait a little while now before having sex with a new person, and part of it is because, as we discussed last week, I'm very demisexual. So I probably am not sexually attracted to someone on the first date unless we already knew each other before the date. And so I have found it, like, helpful sometimes to wait a little bit. But, like, I don't have the self-control probably to wait for the third date. I think second date.
I love how you're like, wait a little bit. One date. Exactly one date. Not a second more than one goddamn date.
Yeah. I think it's nice, too, because, like, it shows me what type of person they are a little bit. Because if they're going to be pushy about sex on the first date, mm-hmm. if I don't want it, like, that, I don't want to be with that type of person. So mm-hmm. there's some benefits to it, but I don't think you should do it just to do it, like, just because you've heard that it's the thing you're supposed to do. Like, if you're gonna do it, you should choose to do it consciously for, like, reasons that matter to you.
I think that is gonna be the answer to so many of
it's
these
true,
things.
True, yeah.
Like, really, if you take the word should out of 90% of these questions and put in the word could, and we'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, you could wait until the third date or not.
It's whatever. True.
Live your life.
Yeah. Well, a related one that came up a lot when I was pulling listeners for this is, like, wait, you have to wait 3 days after a date before, like, calling or texting the person, which I don't think I've...
It's a really long time.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done that. And I think also that that rule probably predates the internet and, like, texting.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, because, like, to me, like, when I was dating more actively, usually I would text them or they would text me, like, later that night or the next morning to be like, I had a great time, either, like, want to see you again or don't. And that seems to be more standard now, I think.
Yeah, I think the three dates thing was very much in the era of phone calls, and I could see, like, waiting 3 dates before expecting to have another long conversation with this person.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, we text so quickly that, like, that does not take a chunk of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it's rude to wait that long at this point. I think you should text them the next morning just to check in, especially if I hook up with someone.
Mm-hmm.
I usually touch base with them the next day just to give them an opportunity to say anything to me that they want to say.
Yeah.
And, like, to check in and remind them that, hey, I had a good time and still like you.
Yeah. And, like, you see them as a human.
Yeah.
This is related to another myth that came up a lot, which is the idea of, like, playing hard to get or sort of preserving the mystery of yourself as a thing that is attractive. And I have always been completely mystified by this, because if someone is seeming reticent, I just assume they're not interested and I move on. Like, I've never really understood the thing of, like, it's supposed to be hot if someone only seems sort of into you. Like, that, I mean, maybe it's because I'm socialized as female, but...
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's just a socialization thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's inherently hot, but I think we tell men that women are a victory and a trophy mm-hmm. and an achievement and something you earn, and yeah. then that behavior makes you something that they can earn, makes you a challenge, makes you, like, so it's really just a bunch of narratives that the culture tells us, and we, and people reinforce mm-hmm. because they're doing what they're told, and then everyone goes, see, it works.
Yeah. I think that there is something to be said for not coming on super, super strong right out of the gate, mm-hmm. because that can be sort of like a boundary violation in some cases. Like, you could make someone uncomfortable by being too into them before they're sure if they're into you.
Yeah, that's what's hard for me, is I always wind up, like, in situations where people are super into me before I even have an idea if I'm into them yet.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard, weird, pressury place to be in, because you don't really get a chance to kind of explore the, like, fun excitement of your own feelings and stuff. It's so relaxing going into a situation with, like, someone that I'm into, and that, like, and being confident in how I feel and being able to explore how they do. Because I'm so much slower at deciding that I'm into people.
Yeah. I think there's maybe a useful differentiation between playing hard to get and, like, being chill. Because I think being chill is more passive. Like, you're not actively trying to get them to think that you're not into them.
Yeah.
In some, like, deceptive way where you're, like, acting too cool or whatever. Like, I don't think that either of these behaviors necessarily serve you if you're both clearly into each other and open to, like, talking about that. But if you're not sure yet, then I see how it's useful to play it a little cool for a bit.
Yeah.
But also, like, I have so many counterpoints to my counterpoints here. Like, if you're a very passionate person who, like, feels things strongly, maybe you want people to know that right away so you can get rid of the ones who are not down for that. I don't know.
I mean, and you can let people know that without letting them know it about them.
Right.
You can talk about other relationships you've had. Mm-hmm. If you have multiple partners, you can talk about your other partners. Mm-hmm. And because people, like, I mean, especially in the poly community, people know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
Like, they see how you have relationships, you know, like, in the kink community, a lot of folks that I play with, I have seen play before with other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can, like, talk about past relationships without, like, putting all of that on them to start. And that's not to say that you can't be, like, you know, meet someone and be like, oh, hey, you're super cute, and then chill for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, wait for them to come back to you.
Right.
It's the way I always, like, it's the way I talk about everything with this flirting and stuff, is you throw, you know, you take one step and you wait for them to take the next step. Mm-hmm. And then you, it's like a three-legged race. You can't just drag them down the fucking track.
Yeah. Related to the idea of playing hard to get is the idea of preserving the mystery, which I've heard so many times, like, don't talk about, you know, your mental health or your bodily functions or anything that is, like, too personal or too revealing, because, like, you should be kind of a mystery to your partner. And, like, I get that for maybe two or three dates. But after that, like, I don't, like, I want people to know that I'm crazy. So.
Right. And, like, how long are you going to maintain that illusion?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people perpetuating this, like, are looking for the one, right? Or, like, I mean, most people dating are looking for someone that they're going to be with for a minute, eventually. Humans tend to partner. And, like, are you going to lie to them forever? Or are you eventually going to disclose to them that you have, in fact, pooped? And, like, when you do, is that going to be a weird conversation because you've never mentioned it for 3 years? And, like, now you've made it a weird big deal.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like,
there was functioning like a human. This reminded me of something. There was this post on the relationship subreddit where this girl, like, shat in her own toilet and then forgot to flush it, and then her boyfriend saw it, and apparently it was so big that he thought she had another dude over while he was out. So he literally demanded to watch her shit so that he could, like, confirm that it was hers.
my shit is not the same size every day.
Right, there's no consistency.
Like there's, is his? I have several questions. Does this man produce the same exact shit every day?
Wow, like a carbon copy. Anyway, there is something to be said, I think, for, like, not spilling everything right away. Because, like, if I told everybody on the first date, like, I'm mentally ill, I have an anxious attachment style, you know, all of this stuff. Yeah. They don't have time to, like, get to know me and get to like me. And, yeah. like, once people like me, they're often willing to overlook stuff like that. Or even, like, accept it and work with it. But
and willing to learn more about it.
Yeah.
Because at first blush, a lot of that stuff can sound scary. And it may yeah. seem like something that they're going to have to overlook.
Right.
And then as they get to know you, they realize, oh, but it also contributes to these parts of her personality that I love and care about. And, yeah. like, it's all an amalgamation of who you are. But that's... And a lot of people, like, I always joke that I come with a required reading list. Like, a lot of people don't necessarily,
yeah.
you know all of that stuff. So you can't even just rattle off, like, anxious attachment style and have them be like, right, checks out. They're like, Google, what? Like, do you have books?
Yeah. I mean, this is why it's great to have a blog. Mm-hmm. So I can just be like, I was just working on this post. They'll be like, what was it about? I'll be like, oh, it's about how I'm depressed and have an anxious attachment style.
Well, and that, like, and the other thing is, there are ways to disclose these things. Because, mm-hmm. like, you go to a first date and you rattle it all off.
Yeah.
They may not leave because you have an anxious attachment style and mental illness, but you're displaying not necessarily great social skills yes. in that moment either.
Yeah.
And that might be a warning flag.
Right.
Right? That you're not displaying great boundaries, which is something people are going to look for in a partner.
Yeah. I like to sort of lightly or jokingly or playfully hint at some of this stuff mm-hmm. on early dates. Or, like, you know, I'll mention something I told my therapist recently or yeah. whatever. Just yeah. sort of subtly. Because if they're going to be terrified of that, then I should... you know, get rid of them as quick as possible.
Yeah, I speak fairly candidly about this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just make a point of not censoring myself on first dates
mm-hmm.
and not, like, if I would say this to a friend at a party that I wasn't trying to fuck, I will generally try to say it to someone on a first date as well.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because I want them to know what they're signing up for. I don't want to waste my time either, and I don't want to have the big weird conversation the first time I bring it up. I just yeah. want them to know that this is what I'm like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time.
Yeah. Okay, so here's an interesting one. The man, if it's a man and woman in a relationship, or like the more masculine person, should make the first move. Like asking the other person out on a date or making a physical kind of move on the date or anything like that.
I mean, patriarchy.
The fucking although it patriarchy. Does remind
this question does make me think of every video I have ever seen of queers. One proposes and the other pulls out the ring that they have in their
so
pocket
because they're yeah.
And this is not like. Lesbians made the rounds recently, but yeah. I have seen so many of these videos because queers are like, I don't know the rules.
Yeah.
So there is something, like, there is, I guess, something to be said for having a social script
mm-hmm.
that people know and can follow. But A, this leaves out so many people.
Yeah.
And B, men are idiots sometimes. Women, sometimes we need women to make shit happen.
Yeah.
Like, fucking do it for us, please.
Yeah, I've dated so many, like, shy nerds where I definitely needed to push things along. But, okay, since I'm apparently playing devil's advocate on every single one of these things.
Sorry, it's because you're letting me talk first.
Yes. I do want to say that, like, sometimes it is important to people to follow these social scripts. Like, when I used to date, like, butch women. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they really enjoyed taking on that kind of, like, chivalrous, traditional masculine type of role and initiating things, and they liked me being sort of, like, the delicate femme. And, like, I enjoy that sometimes almost in, like, a fetishistic kink way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I said almost.
I also do, like, sometimes find it affirming to
yeah.
be the toppier or the, you know, the one that initiates mm-hmm. the date and the one that, like... does that sort of thing. You're talking about this in a kink way. I literally just did a scene like that where it was very, like, very much the stereotypical, like, you know, man making the first move kind of thing.
And when queers do this, it's almost like a little bit of drag or gender performativity in like an interesting way.
Yeah, it's approaching these social scripts and doing them on purpose, whether you're inverting them or not. But yeah, I do, I love queers. I don't know. I don't know where that was going, but I fucking
like,
love queers.
Even when I was dating straight men, like, as much as I sometimes would like to buck the trend and initiate things, some of them were, like, visibly uncomfortable with that, which is, of course, their issue to deal with, and, like, I shouldn't have to deal with that. But, I mean, you do want to date someone in a way that makes them feel comfortable, ideally. So if it's, like, important to a person you're dating and you don't mind either letting them make the first move or you being the one to make the first move, like, maybe do it. But I don't think anyone should have to do it all the time. Like, that sucks for everybody.
Yeah. Don't like it. Don't like it.
Another one is that the man or the more mask person should always pay for the date, which I...
Your boy's broke.
Right. Well, that is the reason I prefer to always pay for myself, especially on a first date, when you probably don't know the other person's financial situation. So I don't want to ever assume that they can afford to pay for the whole thing, and I don't want them to assume that I can afford to pay for the whole thing. We're fucking millennials. A lot of us don't have any money. I also just think, like, in terms of autonomy, I always feel better if I pay my own way on a date. Like, I don't feel like I owe anybody anything. Even if, like, the date doesn't go well and I leave early, I still don't feel like I owe anybody anything, and that to me is, like, worth doing it. I just wouldn't like never really expect someone to automatically pay for me on a date. Like,
I generally like to, but I also, when I take people on dates, like to, like, I have created an experience for you, and I would like to take you on this journey and like do these things for you, like crafting a date for someone. For me, if I ask them out, it's I would like to take you and do this thing with you. And for me, it's a thing that I do kind of service for them in like crafting this experience. And part of that sometimes or a lot of times is paying for some or all of it. So I do like to do it, but I am like careful in my phrasing around it, and I do totally understand why some folks don't super like that.
Yeah. I think it's also nice to do if you are trying to take them to a thing that's, like, nice and expensive, or or take them to a lot of different things, because, like, that might be important for you to give them that experience, but you don't want to, like, presume that anyone can afford that stuff. So, like, if you can, it's nice.
I was gonna say, if you invite someone somewhere that's, like, more than $25 a plate, then I think you pay for that. Like, unless you're I don't, do rich people listen to us? Do we have straight rich people listening to us?
Subscribe to our Patreon. Give money to queers.
But, like, I guess if you are, like, upper class and dating other upper class people and recognize that this is, but I think generally, in the circles at least that I go in, if someone invited me to somewhere where, like, I couldn't get a solid dinner for less than, like, $25-$30, I'd be like, you get this?
Or, like, this? I might do a thing sometimes, like, I might be like, you get this, and then I'll pay for, like, if we go for drinks later or something, and try to even it out that way. I will also say again that sometimes this trope can be inverted or sort of overtaken by queers and kinksters, and used in, like, a fun way. Like, when I had a sugar daddy who was obviously gonna, like, take me out on the town and pay for stuff, or, like, that one time when I hooked up with a British businessman who was visiting on business, and he had a business credit card, and he bought me sushi dinner and wine on the biz credit card, and I was like, fuck, yeah. Like, I definitely had kink feelings about that. I was like, oh, you are my daddy tonight. Okay,
great. Yeah, and again, you put intention behind it, and this weird, annoying thing actually becomes sexy.
Yeah. You should talk about it, though, think, if possible. I mean, it's not always possible to be, like, chill and also talk about this stuff early on, but It is interesting to, like, get a read on how your date feels about this stuff, because... Yeah.
Like I talked about with the other thing, though, I love talking about, like, sex and dating in theory.
Yeah.
Even with someone that I'm, like, considering dating, or, like,
you know. The meta convo, yeah.
Exactly. Like, what are your experiences of this like? And it's a way to have these conversations with a little bit less pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if they have a hard, hard, weird time talking about all of their exes, that's interesting. Mm. Or, like, if they haven't thought critically about any of this, if, like, I ask these questions and they go, oh my god, that's, I don't know, and then, like, can't really get to, like, god, I don't know, and can't really get to an answer, like, that's another sign for me that they're not going to be super compatible with me.
Well, let me ask you this, since you brought up talking about exes, there is, like, a huge taboo about mentioning exes on a, like, especially on a first date, and I think I've probably done that on every fucking date I've ever been on. It's just, like, it comes up because you're telling stories or whatever, and you're like, oh, yeah, with my ex, I blah, blah, blah. Like, you could, I guess, omit them or, like, try very hard to, like, swerve away from those stories. Or I guess if you don't have a lot of exes or don't have any, then, like, there's nothing to bring up. But, like, I just always think if it comes up naturally in conversation, as long as I'm not, like, visibly not over the ex or, like, obsessed with them clearly, like, I don't really see what the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, I think talking about your ex is one thing, like, sitting there telling stories specifically about your ex is one thing,
yeah,
but, like, telling stories about your life that your ex features in, like, they were probably a prominent part of your life for whatever time that they were a partner.
Or even, like you were just saying, sometimes you get into these, like, meta conversations about, like, how do you approach relationships, or, like, what's your relationship history like, and, you know, perfectly fine to discuss it.
Yeah,
I think it's weird to deny that someone you're going out with has a romantic past, because they do, and it shaped them into the person you're on a date with, so.
Yeah. It's this weirdly, like, I mean, it's this virginal shit to, like, pretend like there's no...
Yeah.
It, yeah, it's... No.
Yeah. There was this other Our Relationships post where this girl was mad because her boyfriend wanted her to, like, formally unlove her past exes, and she was like, but, like, I don't, like, they're still, like, important to me.
How do you unlove something?
Right,
is there a ritual involved? Does it happen at our full moon?
I don't know.
Do we burn things?
I was laughing my way through this post, so I didn't really absorb it too fully, but... Okay, here's an interesting one. This is, like, a really big one. People often say opposites attract. So, the actual psychological science on this says that it's wrong. Like, people are very into, overarchingly, like, people with very similar backgrounds to them, like, socioculturally, even economically, and people who have similar interests and values and ethics and stuff. And, like, I think a lot of people would try to argue to you that they're attracted to their opposite, but I think it's not true for the vast majority of people.
Yeah, I would say you're more prone to find, like, a compliment than... 'cause there are distinct differences. Like, a lot of people wouldn't date themselves.
Yeah.
I think is fairly accurate. I think probably, you know, the, like, 60 to 80% similar to you, which is a number I'm fully pulling out of my ass. But
no,
I think
you're right. And I think, like, when I used to be on OkCupid and I would look at the match percentages, I would find always the people I was kind of, like, the most drawn to just from their profile would be in the 60 to 80 range. And, like, I had a partner at one point who was my 99% match on OkCupid, and, like, it was great for a bit. And then it just kind of got boring. Like, we were just too alike. We would get into ruts. We would, like, never challenge each other or push each other out of our comfort zones at all, sexually, romantically, whatever. And it was just, like, not my fave.
Right. Like, I want someone that I will learn things from and can learn things from me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I want, you know, a Venn diagram of interest, but I want to be able to explore their circle. Like, and that's, but complete opposites, no. Like, I think part of that also comes from the fact that relationships where the partners are very different are very explosive and can be very good and then very bad and also very short. But
and in our culture, like, high levels of conflict in relationships is often coded as, like, passion.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you look at popular media. Like, I'm thinking about soap operas and romance novels. Like, it's like, if your relationship isn't full of constant conflict and anguish, then, like, it's not really that passionate. And I actually didn't really understand how wrong that was until my current relationship, because a lot of my past relationships have been, like, rife with conflict, and I always was just like, well, that's how it goes, and, like, no, it doesn't have to.
Yeah, and, like, that's not... That shouldn't be how your friendships are, so I don't know why...
Yeah.
That's why we expect relationships to be that way.
Yeah, pretty weird. What about love at first sight? Is that a thing? So, I'll share my experience with this. I don't believe in it, perhaps because I'm demisexual, mm-hmm. so... But my partner and I have discussed how, like, our first date for both of us was, like, the closest that we've ever gotten to that, because basically after, like, 5 minutes of conversation, we were like, yeah, we want a date. We didn't say that to each other, but we did. And but that's not the same as, like, love at first sight. And I always, whenever I hear these stories about love at first sight, I'm always like, you just thought they were hot. Like, that's not the same thing. What did you see about them that was anything beyond you thought they were hot?
Well, I think it's... our brain retroactively makes these moments significant as we fall in love with them later.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that... Of course, I mean, think back on... We talk about this all the time. We were talking about this earlier. We think back on memories of people we have a crush on. And you're like, well, of course I remember every single detail of that moment.
Yeah.
It's crystallized in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Because of the way you grow to think about that person eventually. Yeah. And I, like, I definitely can remember moments when I've met significant people in my life and they did stand out. Mm-hmm. And in the moment, I do sometimes get a visceral feeling around people that is different from attraction. Mm-hmm. That is like...
This person is going to be this important.
This person is going to matter. This moment is important. This is something I will, you know, like.
But my thing with that, like, I've experienced that. Love. Yeah, I've experienced that, like, a few times. And sometimes I'm right, but sometimes I'm not. Like, sometimes I just never see them again or even, like, find out who they are. And so, like, I don't really trust that as, like, a significant feeling that I need to heed, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's not love. I don't necessarily, like, follow it and acknowledge it, but, like, I can have moments where I'm like, huh, this person's significant. That's...
Yeah.
Wonder where this is gonna go. Like, there is, I think, something in the moment more than just confirmation bias that can happen with people. And I don't think it always leads to something.
Yeah.
But I think there is something, I don't know, in the air or tangible.
Yeah. I think that this question, like many of these, also brings up, like, we don't have a concrete definition for, like, what love is. Like, it's often talked about as, like, a light switch. Like, either you are in it or you are not. But, like, I think it's more like a dimmer switch. And, like, who's to say that having an intense crush on someone out of the blue isn't love, I guess, if you want to have, like, a different definition of love from the standard one. But that's complicated.
Yeah.
That's a philosophy class.
Yeah, there are a million degrees of, like, even romantic love versus platonic love versus, like... Yeah, because I've had, like, crushes on friends who I love dearly as my friend and care deeply about, and I'm not in love with them, but I also have a crush on them, but also, like...
Right, where does that fit in?
And, yeah, and that, like, sounds weirdly complicated, but that is exactly what is true, and I don't know how all of those facts line up in my mind and all of those hold space together, but, feelings are weird.
Yeah. The closest I've ever come to love at first sight, a couple, probably about three occasions, I went on a first date, and from the first date, I knew that I wanted to date the person, and I felt very strongly about them. But, like, that's as close as I've gotten.
Yeah.
This one came up a lot from listeners, sort of two variants on the same idea. If the first date wasn't amazing, it'll never work out. And if you don't kiss on the first date, it'll never work out. I had a date in 2011 with a man from OkCupid who, the first date, I was like, this person's cool. I enjoy talking to this person. I don't know that I'm super attracted. We didn't kiss. I kind of, like, thought about it more afterward and was like, yeah, like, I'll go on a second date. And then we ended up dating for 3.5 years. Like, he was my first love. He was so important to me. He was such a good match for me. And, like, the first date was, like, all right, you know?
Yeah.
Which has just forever taught me that first dates are not to be trusted in some cases.
First dates are a really nerve-wracking experience.
Yeah, not everybody's, like, on their best at that moment.
Yeah, and people are not necessarily themselves when they're stressed.
Yeah.
And, like, when... So, I think first dates and job interviews are very similar.
Yeah.
Like, feelings, if very different, but...
Yeah.
And whenever I interview people for jobs, one of the first things I try and do is get them talking about something that they talk about all the time, that they're comfortable with, that they're passionate about.
Yeah.
To kind of snap them out of it and see a glimpse of who they are.
Right.
Because when I started interviewing people, I would realize the person who showed up for work 3 months after that interview was a very different person.
Yeah.
I
think that some of us, like, sort of intuitively do this type of thing on first dates when you kind of talk about, like, well, what do you like to do when you're not working? Like, what are your hobbies? What are your passions? I think that it's a much more common question on a first date, and it's a good one for the reasons that you're describing.
Yeah, but I think, like, even then, it's hard to see a glimpse of, like, someone with their guard down a little bit, and it's hard to see that on a first date, too.
Yeah.
And
if you have somebody who is perhaps demisexual, so they take a while to form sexual attractions, or someone who has been through some kind of relationship or sex trauma, so they take a while to warm up, like, there are a lot of different reasons why a first date might not show the most amazing things that could come out of a relationship, and it might just take time.
Yeah. But then... How do you, like, where is the line between who is worth seeing a second time? Like,
I have a whole post about second dates because, like, this was before I realized I was demi. So, like, I was freaking out about, like, how do you know whether to go on a second date? Because I feel like there's this, like, unspoken thing. If you go on a second date with someone, it's like you like them a significant amount, and, like, you might want to do more after that. And it's like, I don't even know by that point. So I find them very stressful. And, like, I'm kind of at a point now where I feel like if I'm at all on the fence about it, I'll do it just to see what happens.
Yeah.
But I haven't always felt that way.
Second dates sometimes feel like the first step onto the relationship escalator. Yeah. Like, you're like, oh God, now it's moving. Oh God.
Yeah. Like, and you feel more, like, invested. So it's kind of like a time sunk fallacy thing where, like, you feel like you can't back out in good conscience. It's scary.
Yeah. It's weirdly complicated.
Yeah. Okay. A big one. You can't love someone properly until you love yourself.
Bullshit.
Fuck this. Okay, there are so many people in the world who don't love themselves because our society is literally structured to make sure people don't love themselves. Like, capitalism, man. And there are people with, like, eating disorders and, like, body dysmorphia and personality disorders that make them hate themselves. Like, so many different reasons why you could hate yourself.
And...
You still deserve love.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like that's such an ephemeral thing of, like, I mean, definitely there are people who have, like, this deep-seated feeling of unease with themselves that does not go away. Mm-hmm. But there are other people who, like, that shit fluctuates. Like, if my depression's acting up, it's very possible I hate who I am. Yeah. Like,
I will say, like, there are some...
Do you just, like, break up with someone when that happens? Be like, shit, sorry, today I don't love me enough to love you anymore. I've filed divorce papers.
I have actually literally considered ending relationships because of that. Because, like, a depression flare-up would happen and I would just sink into this pit of despair of, like, I can hardly manage my relationship with myself. What makes me think I deserve to be in a relationship with someone else? Which is 100% just a depression thought. But I think that a lot of people get nervous about that because this is such a commonly spouted truism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, the kernel of truth in it is that if you are so consumed by your self-esteem issues that you... can't really function in relationships, or you're just like very self-absorbed about it, then like that's obviously going to be a problem. But I think like most people, like I think the average person probably like mildly dislikes themselves and functions fine.
Yeah, I mean, I would dislike anyone I had to spend 24/7 with.
Right, exactly.
Right, like I don't get to get away from myself. Of course I annoy myself sometimes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and like the other thing too is like so many of the things that I don't like about myself have been things that partners have liked about me. Yeah. So it's not like I'm objectively garbage just because I think I'm garbage.
And you can learn to think differently about yourself by looking through your partner's eyes.
Oh, absolutely.
In different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to hate my body, and when I started dating people who were quite vocal about their love for specific parts of my body, it, like, absolutely was night and day. It made a huge change for me. Because I'd be like, oh, like, I don't think I'm hot, but someone could. Interesting.
I think there's, like... Yeah, I think what you were talking about with the kernel of truth in this is very much that, like, you should be in... somewhat good working order to be in a relationship with someone else.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you need to take a minute to figure out your shit, but you should be in more or less working order, whatever that looks like for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Before going into a relationship with someone.
Yep. Our friend Taryn submitted this one. This is just a heteronormative mess. Happy wife, happy life. So this is such an interesting
idea. But it rhymes, it's cute.
It does, yes. So the kernel of truth in this one, it's actually, I think it's bigger than a kernel. You will have a better life if your partner is happy. Because probably your relationship will be better. And, you know, that's a good thing. But I think the implication is that, like, it's almost like if you put enough work into your relationship, you don't have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, well, and this is also very much, I don't know, rooted in this idea of the wife is the nag and, like, this kind of matriarchal, like...
Yeah, like, she manages your whole life, so if she's pissed off, your home life is
exactly,
gonna be a
mess. Like, she's more your boss than your partner. Like, kind of also your mom.
Yeah, you have to appease her.
Yeah, that you're not making her happy through, like, being a good partner.
Right.
But, like, this is something, actually, my father says sometimes, but he will say it around, like, you know, doing chores for her or doing things for her and stuff. And it's like, well, also, you're a member of the household.
Right. It's like there's those books that are, like, porn for women, and it's, like, photos of men doing housework. I get so just fucking furious when I see these because, like, first of all, the whole notion of porn for women is a weird idea to begin with, but, like, that's not what porn is, and also women have sexualities, and also men should just fucking do the housework anyway. Like, you're an adult. What?
Yeah, and it's and there's, like, a weird degree of fear around it. Like, in that you're afraid of her being unhappy, not that you want her to be happy because you care about her.
Right. If you're afraid of your partner, you're in the wrong relationship, bud. Like,
yeah,
get out of there.
I don't understand what is with straight people being enemies with their partner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they... Straight people seem like they approach relationships like they're a contest. Or a competition.
Right. And there's so little... communication.
Like, they go out for girls' nights and guys' nights and have, like, strategy meetings. And, like, I don't fully understand heterosexuality.
To be fair, we don't know many straight people, so it's possible we're getting this wrong.
I've watched a rom-com or three. This is where I learned about this.
I don't know that those are representative, actually, but...
I don't know. There are a lot of people out there learning from them.
It's true. That's very
like,
true.
I don't know that they're representative, but they may have also created that culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I'm torn on this one, though, because, like, I do think more straight men should put more work into making their wives happy.
Exactly.
But it's just such a toxic...
But men who say this don't.
Yeah, it's true. Because it's just like a rote thing that they feel like they have to do rather than like wanting to do it because they like their partner.
Also, for context, we're ragging on people who say this. My dad is like a good dad and a good husband and like takes care of shit, but he also says like shit like this sometimes.
Yeah.
But like, for context, all of the shitting on this is not all subtweeting my father.
Okay, this is an interesting one. You hear this one a lot. Never go to bed angry, which is the idea that like if you have a fight with your partner, you should like resolve it to some extent before you go to sleep. And I've heard a lot of, like, especially couples who've been together for a long time citing this as, like, the secret to their longevity. So I find it interesting, but I would argue that in some conflicts you need time apart or time to process and think.
See, here's the thing. I'm a bitch when I'm angry, when I'm tired. Ooh, like,
I see where you're going. Yeah.
So
you're like, I need like, a nap, and then we can reconvene.
If we start a fight at like 9 o'clock and it's like 1 a.m., that fight is not getting resolved.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna get angrier. I'm just gonna get like less coherent.
Yeah,
like it's not.
Yeah,
that staying up just for the sake of resolving something is not conducive to getting it resolved.
Yeah,
I
will say for me, like this does resonate to some extent because if I have had a fight with a partner and then I try to go to sleep, I won't be able to sleep. Like, I just, that's how my brain goes. I just ruminate. Either I'm mad or I'm regretful or I'm hating myself or I'm mad at them, like whatever. So it's just like looping in my brain. And so it's like almost impossible for me to sleep. And so like, even if it's sort of a stopgap solution, even if it's like, okay, we're going to agree to disagree on this for now and we'll talk about it tomorrow and I love you. Like, I think that that's better than nothing, you know?
Yeah, I don't think you have to resolve the fight, but I think you need to, like, at least... I think make an appointment to solve the fight before you go to bed.
Especially if you're sharing a bed with this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I will, like... If I think part of the issue here is people will go to sleep, wake up the next morning, and then go around life as usual, and this will never get resolved.
Yeah.
Because when you wake up, you start your morning routine, right? How many of you, they're going to wake up and go to work? Like, they're not.
Yeah.
And wake up back into life, and then this issue never gets talked about, and that will fuck up a relationship.
And you got to, like, put it on your calendar when you have time to actually get into it.
Acknowledging, yes, we still care about each other. This is something we're going to need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Is more valuable than staying up bickering because a wedding quote told you to.
Yeah. I think it's like a lot of these, I think it's a nice idea, but it's poorly executed and doesn't work for everybody in the way that it's intended.
I mean, isn't that the nature of like adages?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's true, but they represent themselves as universal, and almost none of them are, yeah.
It's great, they give us so much content.
Okay, we were kind of talking about this earlier, the idea of, like, persistence being key, and it's especially told to men, that your job is basically to wear down the person you're trying to date until they say yes to you, whether that's for a date or for sex, and that's just... You know, it never really held up, but in 2019, it especially does not hold up.
Yeah, it's icky. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I think that's our hot take on that.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for, as we were talking about, the social scripts. And I do think that there are probably a fair number of women, straight women, who do like being pursued even when they've like playfully given a no, but it's just like, I don't think you should ever assume that that's the case unless like you hear that from the person's face that they want that, because like it's just too dangerous. Like, you're gonna end up steamrolling someone's boundaries if you just adopt that as your you know modus operandi. It's just not gonna go well for anybody.
Yeah.
If you want to do like, you know, it can be really fun as a role play, as we've talked about.
Can confirm.
Like, pushing through someone's boundaries, but...
Can confirm.
But obviously, you pre-negotiate.
Exactly.
And you talk about exactly which boundaries you're going to push and how.
Yeah. So, I did a scene recently that was exactly that, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, just a little more. Oh, we already did this. Why don't we just do this, too?
And it's so entrenched in our culture.
It was a kink scene that I called a consensual non-consent scene.
Yes.
And I approached it in that way and was considering it approaching edge play.
Yeah.
And so much of our culture is like, that's how you date. And yeah. That's really fucked up.
Fucking in rom-coms. You just like have John Cusack showing up with the boombox being like, but date me though. And it's like,
Yeah.
No though.
Like, and I mean, there's a reason that that's hot as a kink thing for
Absolutely,
me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's because it's all over this culture and I'm sure there's gender stuff tied into it for mm-hmm. me, right? For me, that is what I'm told men do, and that right. is how I show, like, my masculinity and my virility
and
through
you didn't grow up performing someone. That role.
Right, and I didn't get to do any of that, and, like,
it's... You wouldn't have.
Even. And I wouldn't yeah. have. Yeah, no, that's... I didn't get to date as a teenage boy in general.
Right.
And I wouldn't have been shitty in that way, obviously, but, mm-hmm. like, I didn't even get to explore what dating as a teenage boy look like.
Yeah.
So get playing with this dynamic, but yeah, it like, I don't know. I lost that sentence.
I'm reading this book right now that's about teenagers in high school. And this girl like kind of like softly rejected this guy. And then he, another day did like an elaborate dance and song routine where he was asking her to a dance like in front of the whole school. And so of course like she didn't feel like she could say no because like everybody was watching and he had put all this effort into this thing. And it was just like, I feel like so much of the like persistence is key type of narrative is about thinking of women as like trophies or robots or vending machines where it's like, if you just push the right buttons in the right order, like you'll get what you want. And it's like, they're people, you have to talk to them about what they want and see if that lines up with what you want. And like, they're just fucking humans. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That makes me so fucking mad. I think this was our friend Luna who brought this up. Women who have had a lot of sex are bad relationship material. I actually have heard this also about men.
That
it just like says something about their character. And I was actually having a discussion with our friend Brent about this on my other podcast, Question Box, because one of the questions I posed to him was like, is there a number of past sexual partners that a prospective partner could have that would be too high for you, that would like put you off the person? And he kind of threw out that like 300 would make him bristle a little bit, but he would still be open to hearing about like why she did that and like, you know, whether she did it from like a healthy place, and if not, then like whether she'd addressed that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was like a, you know, fairly well-reasoned answer that made sense to me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, if you know it, especially if this is someone who
Sorry.
I know doesn't have like a history of sex work or something like that,
mm-hmm.
where if it was like a number high enough that I was like surprised, I'd be like, all right, tell me more, you right. know, whatever. But yeah, I think this is, again, if you are the kind of person that buys into this, it might say that they're not a great partner for you.
Right.
Right? Like, if you're a person who sex is very tender and intimate and something you only want to do with people you care very deeply about,
mm-hmm.
and someone shows up and is like, I've had 300 partners,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, actually they may not be a good partner for you.
Yeah.
But I think this is more of a compatibility question
yeah.
than a moral character question.
to be slut's advocate for a sec, I actually, like, went through the gauntlet of sluttiness and came back around the other side to a point where, like, I wouldn't say that I reserve sex only for a special few necessarily, but, I mean, that is literally what I'm doing right now, but I'm not mm-hmm. doing it on purpose. But it's more just, like, I came around to the realization that I enjoy sex more when it is emotionally meaningful for me. And in that sense, like, being a slut for a while made me better relationship material because I learned more about myself and what I like, and also learned a lot about like people's bodies and how to do good stuff to them. And you know, I learned a lot of stuff that I find really valuable in my, you know, deeply emotional intimate relationships.
Yeah, I'm honestly more apprehensive the lower someone's number is, mm-hmm. only because have you done that work?
Right.
Like, honestly, if someone has never had sex but has read a ton of books and is, like, you know, in the sex positive community or whatever, like,
mm-hmm.
understands at least theoretically how they relate to people,
yeah.
I might be more willing to go on that journey with them. But even then, as much as you understand theoretically, once you start doing stuff, you're going to learn all kinds of new things about yourself and your own preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And I do prefer to date people who kind of have that shit down, or at least are in the process of doing some of their own work. Because I've been doing a lot of work for a very long time, and I don't want to be the only one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, if I was to hook up with someone who had only been with, I don't know, two or three or even fewer people before, I would be nervous that they would, like, be really intense about it and think that everything was, like, more significant than, like, it was to me, which, again, is just, like, a compatibility issue.
Well, there is, there's also a lot of stuff around, a lot of stigma sometimes around fucking virgins.
Yes.
Because the idea of them, like, imprinting like a puppy.
Right. Well, okay, weirdly, which, like, to me, fucking a virgin has, like, long been a fantasy of mine, but it's one of those things where, like, I don't know if this is just hot as, like, a kink thought, or if I actually would want to do this. Because, like, what's hot to me is that idea of, like, this would be so special to them and, like, such a singular experience, and they would be, in a sense, like, grateful.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a power dynamic there, but I do worry about, like, yeah, whether they would, like, sort of imprint on me. Which, I guess, like, the badness of that depends on whether or not I like them.
Yeah, I mean, you are... Like, because there is some kernel of truth to that.
Yeah.
You are more or less forever a part of their history.
Yeah. They'll think, like, about you a lot.
They will. Yeah. They will probably always know your name. Yeah. Like, and you are experiencing a degree of intimacy and... certain, just, like, hormone and physical body stuff for the first time, and that can hit you emotionally and physically in ways that you don't necessarily expect.
Yeah.
And for some people, that can be a very bonding experience.
Yeah. And this happens in interesting ways with queer folks, especially those who come out later in life.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes referred to as, like, the gay virgin effect, where it's, like, your first same-sex or queer experience can imprint on you in a similar way. There's, like, a plot line on The L Word where this, like, 50-something-year-old woman finally comes out as gay, and she, like, becomes obsessed with the first woman that she hooks up with, even though they're, like, not a terribly good match, because, like, that's just how she feels. And so, yeah.
Yeah. There are degrees to it. I'm not saying I never would, but I would need to... I wouldn't fuck them as casually as I would fuck someone else, which I think is probably smart.
Yeah,
I would need to have some conversations with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure I at least genuinely like them as a human, because I would want to, like, at least be around for a little while. Like, I wouldn't do it as a casual hookup.
Mm-hmm.
I would touch base with them after, see how you're doing, because I feel like that requires a little bit of aftercare.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when we devised a theory that someone I had hooked up with from Tinder, we retroactively thought maybe he was a virgin?
I do remember that.
Because, like, this was, like, 2 years later or something, I started thinking about this, because, like, I just pieced together a bunch of sort of pieces of evidence and things that he had said, and I was like, it's actually possible, because he, like... He mentioned he had never been on a Tinder date before. He was, like, sort of nerdy and shy. Not that that necessarily portends anything. But then he, like, became oddly, like, fixated on me afterward, even though I didn't live anywhere near him and was not returning to his city. So we were kind of, like...
I would just, like, reach out to you, like, months later.
Months later. I was like, I'm never coming back. I don't know why.
I had a guy like that, too, from OkCupid. He was not a virgin. I mean, probably not. He told me I had a cute asshole.
So probably so presumably he's seen some.
Other assholes. Yeah.
And, like, a palette of assholes.
And, like, knew
to.
He was, like, super into rimming and shit. So, like not into shit. But, like, different thing. Context, you know. Yeah. Definitely wasn't. But also, like, showed up, like, months and, like, a year later. He wasn't from my city, but, like, he came back and he was like, hey. And I was like, I have not seen you in, like, a year and a half. Like, what the fuck?
He's, like, still thinking about that butthole.
Let me see. I don't know if it's as cute. I've put a lot more in it.
A slut hole, if you will. All right. I think that's it for now.
On that note.
Yeah. We're going to do a part two because we just got so many of these. I was just inundated with them because there's so much shit out there that is wrong about relationships. So we'll do a part two. We'll get angry about some more bullshit.
Great. Love it. Can't wait.
I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, and you can check out my other podcast, Question Box, the game show podcast of shockingly personal questions, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at thedildorks and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. And we're on Spotify.
Yay! It's up today.
Well, theoretically.
Probably.
It said I would be on Spotify in an hour, and then we recorded a podcast. Mm-hmm. So maybe we are now.
Possibly, yeah.
We'll find out later.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, they are hearing this in the future anyway, so we're definitely up now.
Well, unless they rejected us, but that seems unlikely. Well, we're a sex podcast, though, so...
There are lots of sex podcasts on there, though.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Also, sign up for our Patreon. Give me your money. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Patreon.com/thedildorks.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Our theme song was done by Protodome. He's wonderful. Our logo was done by Amy. Thank you, Amy. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye. There we go.
It's so fucking slow.
I know.
Okay, I just wanna... How does it...
You were using it backwards.
I literally didn't notice. Okay. Fuck. Okay. I'm not even the high one.
No.